JC Corcoran Podcast.
Thank you. You guys are very, very nice. I had a nice flight in. Didn't land in the Hudson or anything, but... How about Captain Sullenberger, huh? Man, a hero? But he's not allowed to think that he's a hero. That's one of the rules about being a hero. You're not allowed to think you're one. They have to ask you if you think you're one, and you have to say no. And then everything's good. You think you're a hero, Captain Sullenberger? No. I don't think I'm a hero. Good. He's a hero who don't even think that he's a hero. What a hero! All's good in the world. I think it would be okay to admit it. It was kind of obvious. Captain Sullenberger, do you think you're a hero? Yes. Did you see the footage of that plane coming in? Do you have any idea how hard that was? Wings level, nose up, tail down. I'm a hero. Because I saved everybody's life. I'm going to get a cape. I was watching the news that night, and it was amazing. They had the footage of the plane in the water with all the people out on the wings. They go back to the newsroom, and a news anchor said, "Can you imagine a better ending to this story?" Landing in Charlotte with luggage and dry socks.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Thursday, May 12th, 2022. 190 days remaining in our American democratic system of government, as we have noted. How you doing, kids? Welcome to JCOnTheLine.com. That Brian Regan thing, I thought of it the other day when I was watching video footage of this guy who's flying from the Bahamas into West Palm, and the pilot just suddenly becomes unresponsive. And here's this guy sitting, I guess, in the back seat or in the seat next to him, I don't know. And he looks over, and the pilot's like slumped over, and he realizes he's got to fly the plane, and he's never flown a plane in his life. You've probably seen the story already. And the guy makes a perfect landing. And we're talking to some guy at the airstrip who is a flight instructor, and he says, my students, usually 15 to 20 hours of training before they even get a chance to try and land a plane in a simulator. And this guy is just up there, and he makes a perfect landing on his first try with no flying experience. Oh, it better not come out that this was a hoax and that this guy is a professional pilot. That's all I'm saying. It better not come out. This guy better be telling the truth. That's all I got to say. I briefly dated one of the television reporters in St. Louis who was up in the helicopter every day doing traffic reports for one of the morning news shows. And she told me that she was always asking questions of the pilot, like when they weren't actually doing traffic reports and they're just flying around. And she wanted to know how to fly the thing just in case something like that ever happened. And so she was like taking copious notes about how to fly. And that's a fucking helicopter. Those things are psycho. Alan Barklage told me a long time ago when I was flying with him once, he said, yeah, there's an old saying, planes have a tendency to fly, helicopters have a tendency to crash. Then, of course, he got into one every day of his life and flew around and then, crashed in that experimental thing. I think there were lawsuits all over the place, too, because it was a very hot day. And Alan had built this helicopter himself. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but I guess it's like anything else. If you're really super into it, you have a different set of interests. And so, yeah, so Alan built this thing himself and then went up in the air on a very, very hot Saturday afternoon. It was like 95 degrees. and the engine just locked up and he crashed and he was killed. And I think that company that manufactured these kits, where you would buy the parts and then build the thing in your garage and then go take it out and fly it like Alan did, there were reports of these engines, which is basically like a lawnmower engine, you know, locking up when it was really, really hot outside. I don't know what happened in terms of the lawsuits. Happy stories, JC. Happy stories. Well, the Cardinals raised a little hell last night, and the Blues will get a chance to raise a little hell tonight at the Enterprise Center. So those are the two big stories. I gave up on the Cardinal game after a while because it was just such a runaway, and I was getting tired. Six of their first seven runs came with two outs. And this brings up a By the fourth inning in this game, the Cardinals already had five doubles. But it raises the issue of something that I should have written a book about this years ago, because I'm fascinated by the concept of momentum, especially as it applies to sports. A baseball team, for example, can go out and the score's nothing to nothing. They'll go out and put six runs on the board in the fourth inning or something. But if it's the other way around, and the Cardinals have six runs scored off of them in the fourth inning, and they're down 6-0, statistically, you basically have no chance of winning that game, or very little chance. It's something like 80% of the games where you're down 6-0 in the early innings. You're going to lose that game. And if you start thinking about it, you say to yourself, why? Because it's all psychological at that point. The team, in essence, gives up. And just says, we got another game tomorrow night, so we're going to lose this one. Every once in a while, of course, team comes back from a six-run deficit, or even more than that. I mean, there's stories of, you know, teams being down by 10 or 11 runs. You know, the Cardinals have done that in the past. You're down 10 runs, you come back, you win the game. But that almost never happens. That's why it's so exciting when it actually does occur. But it almost never happens. But, as I said, if you really think about it for a couple of minutes, it's completely counterintuitive. It should make no difference whatsoever what the score is while you're playing professional sports or any sport on any level. The score of the game should not matter, but it sure does. And that's where momentum comes in. Like I said, you know, I'm fascinated by the whole concept, and I should have written a book about it a long time ago. Speaking of sports, the NFL releases their schedule for the entire season tonight. It's interesting the way people scattered in terms of their fandom after the Rams left St. Louis, because a lot of people went to Kansas City. Some people went to Green Bay. A very small number of people went to the Chicago Bears. You also got those idiots who always go to Dallas, or every once in a while it'll be just something completely random, and you'll find a Jets fan living in the Midwest. I don't know why, but when I'm watching an AFC game, it doesn't seem as interesting or as compelling to me as when I'm watching the NFC. The AFC, to me, still feels like, you know, that other league. Yesterday, Forbes put out their list of the world's 10 highest-paid athletes for 2022. Top three, Lionel Messi, $130 million. LeBron James, $121.2 million. Cristiano Ronaldo, with $115 million. There's your top three. Speaking of lists, it was a great year for CBS, the most watched scripted shows list came out yesterday, the top 20 shows in America. Let's do them in ascending order. The Good Doctor on ABC in 20th place. 911 Lone Star, 911. Magnum PI at 17. NCIS LA in 16. La Brea, Bull, This Is Us, NCIS Hawaii, FBI International, Ghosts on CBS number 10, FBI Most Wanted, Chicago Med at 8, Young Sheldon, the first situation comedy to appear on the list, is in there at number 7, Chicago PD, The Equalizer, Blue Bloods, Chicago Fire, FBI at number 2, and NCIS at number 1. Almost all those shows, almost all of them, I think 14 out of the 20 are CBS shows. Late Night Tonight, by the way, Howie Mandel and Arcade Fire with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Kimmel's got Jerrod Carmichael. Stephen Colbert still out with COVID. Smashing Pumpkins on with James Corden, and Seth Meyers has Amy Sedaris. Henry Winkler, Gina Davis, Selma Blair all have memoirs coming out. Andy Dick is a piece of shit. I don't even understand why anybody in show business still acknowledges his existence. You know, you go all, you can go so far back, and he's just nothing but trouble. Nothing but trouble. And was arrested during a live stream in an RV for felony sexual battery. Not only is he beating up another one of his boyfriends, he's doing it live on the internet now. Have you seen the pictures of Rebel Wilson? Now, she was the, shall we say, plump one in pretty much every situation comedy you've ever seen. I guess she had her stomach stapled or something, and she's not chubby anymore. She says she's in a relationship now, but get this. In 2019, while she was still, and I'll use that word plump, okay? In 2019, while she's still carrying all that weight, she says she dated 50 different people. Rami Malek played Freddie Mercury in the Queen movie, is 41 today. Malin Ackerman from Showtime's Billions, 44, likes to take her shirt off. We love that. Jason Biggs from the American Pie movies at 44. Kim Field Tootie is 53. Emilio Estevez, 60. Ving Rhames, Marcellus in Pulp Fiction. And also Kevin Kline's bodyguard in Dave. He was great in that role. He's a good actor, 63. Billy Squier, 72. Steve Winwood, 74. Burt Bacharach, 94. And it was on this date in 1971 that, oh, isn't this sweet? Mick Jagger is getting married. Her name is Bianca. That was 71. They were actually together for 9 years. They got one child, one of Mick's seven children, with four different women. The heat continues to be the big story. St. Louis sets a record yesterday. I guess it was 93 degrees, and we're shooting for that again. Probably break another record today, and then things start to subside tomorrow and some rain coming in and stuff like that. Here's a dumb idea, and I saw a promo for this for the first time last night. You know how they do the home run derby? It was a TV show back in the 50s. That was, you know, mildly entertaining. And then, of course, they started doing it as part of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. They do that the night before the actual game. And now they're going to do a junior home run derby. This is for young boys, and I guess girls too, look to me to be like Little League age. Guy who came up with this idea ought to be fired. They're little kids. See, and this is how the people who are, all this stuff has to be sanctioned by Major League Baseball. You can't just do this. So these are the people who are actually running Major League Baseball putting this on. And it just shows you where the mindset is right now. And it has been for the last couple of years. The whole game has been reduced to strikeouts and home runs. And here we go again. Now they're even stressing this with kids. At this level, it should be about fundamentals and execution. Yeah, you get to get, this kid's going to come up here and hit a whole bunch of home runs in this competition, but then get out there and play in a real game and throw to the wrong base, or not being able to bunt a runner along, or not slide the right way, or know how to hit a cutoff man from the outfield. One bad decision after another being made by the people who run Major League Baseball. A momentous occasion on this date back in 1995, but it requires a backstory. So in 1993, I get approached by the people who are running the Fox and the Point. The Fox was at 101.1. That frequency occupied now by 101 ESPN. But back then, it was a very weak signal coming out of St. Gen. By the time the signal hit the St. Louis area, it was sort of weak. Pretty much had to listen in your car. Couldn't pick it up on a clock radio and stuff like that. And at this time, we're talking about 1993, people still had clock radios back then. And it didn't really penetrate the downtown or the Clayton office buildings. And you just can't kick ass when there's too many places where your signal cannot be picked up. Well, then, JC, why did you go to work there? Because they told me they were only a couple of weeks away from moving the tower to St. Louis, and then everything was going to be fixed. Well, after 2 years, I'm still waiting for the tower to move. The ratings are okay, but they're not as good as they would have been if people would have been able to hear us. And so they're like, 2 years later, it's 1995 on this date, and they say, JC, you're history. And so I leave the radio station, and about 4 months later, then they move the tower from St. John to St. Louis. And then all of a sudden people can hear what has now been called from the, they changed the name from the Fox to the River, and now people can hear it, and the station did very, very well. But that's why I never believe anybody when they tell me what is going to happen. It's like, it's either happening or it isn't happening, because I just don't believe anybody anymore. On this date, 1989, Don Miller strikes again. Don Miller, the erstwhile traffic reporter from KMOX who hated us. He narked once on Alan Barklage because Alan was had a landing strip behind the radio station in Creve Coeur, and he was supposed to get clearance from the tower at Lambert to be able to take off. The problem is these guys up there at the tower were always sleeping on the job, and Alan would be sitting there in the helicopter trying to take off. And they're like, hello, anybody get me any clearance? You know, whatever. And finally, he'd just fucking take off. And he did that a couple of times in emergency situations. And guess who narks on him? Don Miller. But the great part of the story is that Don Miller denied that he was doing it. And then via the Freedom of Information Act, we got a hold of the document, single space typewriter, signed Don fucking Miller. Lion sack of shit. So anyhow, we decided to do a free gas giveaway at that, I think it was a Shell station on Lindbergh, about a quarter mile north of Highway 40. You know where it is. Sort of where Foreshaw is, like right in there. And we start giving away gas. Well, now, as you might expect, the traffic is backed up. And people are over to the right side there, northbound on Lindbergh, all the way back to Highway 40. And now the traffic starts backing up actually onto the highway. And Don Miller's up there flying around looking down going, oh, these people are doing this, and they're tying up the traffic, and it's causing all sorts of problems, and blah, 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 blah. And a couple of weeks later, the KMOX-sponsored hot air balloon show at Forest Park is going through a run-through during morning drive. You got all these big, colorful balloons there in Forest Park that are sort of floating around, and the traffic slows to nothing because people are watching the balloons and they're not watching where they're driving. There were a couple of accidents because people had taken their eyes off the road, off the traffic situation, because they're watching these balloons. And Don Miller's flying around up there going, yeah, we're looking down on Highway 40 right now, and people are just being wonderfully entertained by these balloons. Yeah, yeah. That's entertainment. A 45-minute traffic jam and you're late for work. But I'm entertained. That was 1989. That's when radio wars were fun. Back in 2008, that was the PGA U.S. Senior Open. Is that what they call it? It was something like that. And it was going to be one of those huge golf weekends in St. Louis. And that's one thing that the town really does a great job on. They do a sensational job staging events like this. And people like Jim Woodcock and Frank Viverito, wonderful guys in the community that work their asses off to get these sporting events in St. Louis, like all this stuff at the Enterprise Center, like wrestling and, I don't know, all that other stuff that comes at volleyball. And people are people, you know? It's like, I don't care who they are, where they come from, just as long as you come to St. Louis for the big sports weekend, the big tournament, the big competition, and you spend a lot of money. That's all we care about. But in 2008, Belle Reve Country Club is not a place where people like me get invited. But they invited us out. We did a live broadcast out there, and as part of the coverage, if you covered that thing that day, they allowed you to play the course. And so now we're out there playing fucking Belle Reve. I had never seen anything like that in my life. It was just immaculate and also large, because that's when you find out, oh yeah, these professional golfers in these tournaments, these guys really are good. I mean, it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of yards of property that you have to navigate, and you hit the goddamn thing four or five times and you're still not on the green. It was amazing. And for this one, we go back to 1986, because I moved into a house in Baldwin over by Big Bend and Hannah Road, and I didn't know that anybody even knew I had moved in there. I just wanted to sort of, you know, blend into the community. I didn't want to attract any attention to myself or anything like that. Just move into a nice, quiet house. Well, I immediately started getting harassed by a guy by the name of Doug Wickenheiser of the St. Louis Blues, who was a great practical joker, ended up being a great friend. And if you live in St. Louis and you don't know the meaning of the Monday Night Miracle that happened on this date back in 1986, well, I can't help you.
6 seconds to go. The crowd bringing hockey back to St. Louis from the days of the late 60s, early 70s. And Jock Plott, Glenn Hall, Doug Harvey, what a night for the Blues. They've tied this series at two victories aside.
23 seconds left in the two-man advantage for St. Louis. They trail 4-1. Third period. Natras, the save! A skate save by Vernon on Natras. Wickenheiser, the shot! He scores! It's 4-2! Getting hemmed in their own zone again. Peplinski centers to Mullen. He shoots and scores, and you could see that one coming. Natras playing it to Gilmore. On to Pazlowski. A shot kicked out. Rebound. Center shoots and scores! There are 8 minutes remaining in the third period and maybe in the hockey season for the St. Louis Blues. And Gilmore deflects the puck in. Sutter into the corner. Centers. They score! Pazlowski, and they'll go crazy! The St. Louis Blues have been in this game what they have been all season and throughout the playoffs. An underdog. They've called this club a lunch bucket team. They're blue-collar hard workers. They don't have the talent of other teams. They know it. Boy, you get the idea. If the Blues can come up with a miracle finish, these Calgary Flames would have to crawl back to Alberta. 1:17 to go. The Blues need a goal to continue on. 1:10 remaining. A shot, they score! Pazlowski! The Blues, a remarkable comeback. And this sixth game unbelievably goes to overtime. Here's a drive. McKinnis wide. And Walmsley has the puck come right in front off the boards. Bernie Federko spun around. Here's Wickenheiser shooting, and Vernon the big save. Calgary can end it if they win it. Here they come. McCowan to Mullen. Mullen shot. Oh! Goal post. He hit the post, and Walmsley makes another save. Here's Ramage for Federko. Too far. Federko steals the puck from Reinhardt. Over to Hunter, who shoots block. Wickenheiser scores! Doug Wickenheiser! The Blues pull it off, and it's unbelievable!
When I think of wonderful families, I think of Doug Wickenheiser. He had twin girls plus another daughter, a lovely wife, Diane. I just talked to her online. It was about a year or two ago on the anniversary of the Monday Night Miracle. The girls are all doing great. Diane's doing great. But when all this stuff was happening, it was one of the saddest things I have ever seen in my life. And then the funeral. Oh, the girls were just, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old at the time. And they had drawn these little pictures with crayons and they were taped to the casket. And it was just the most I can't even think about it anymore. Oh my God. You talk about heartbreaking. So you had all that elation of the Monday Night Miracle and the whole celebratory aspect of the whole thing. And Doug just being able to bask in the reflected glory of that goal. One of the most memorable moments in St. Louis sports history. And a couple of years later, just crushing disappointment and sadness. You look up in the rafters and you see that 14. Because there's people who go now and they don't know this story. I mean, we're talking about something here that happened in 1986. 36 years ago. 36 years ago. There's people who go to the hockey games who don't even know this story. They don't know anything about it. So if you're ever there at the Enterprise Center and some of these newbies are sitting there, educate them. Educate them. Point up there and say, you know what that, you have any idea what that is? No. And tell them the story of Doug Wickenheiser. All right, last couple of days I've been telling you about this Sheryl Crow documentary. It's a two-hour thing on Showtime, and it started running over the weekend and is rerunning several times. You can also pull it down on demand. And this is one of the greatest things I've ever seen of its kind. I see documentaries all the time. You know, like Dan Rather's doing really, really good stuff on Axis TV and has been for a very, very long time. And there are other shows, The Sound of My Voice, maybe the best documentary I've seen in a long time. That was the Linda Ronstadt story. So some of these things are coming out now and they're just fascinating. But this thing, I got goosebumps just thinking about this show. 2 hours, you don't even have to be a fan of Sheryl Crow to enjoy this thing, because in addition to it being her story, it's a great snapshot and a sort of an encapsulated version of the rise of a pop/rock star in America and how it works and what the ups and the downs are. And they covered a tremendous amount of ground. And she was open about everything, including the Lance Armstrong thing and everything else. There are only a couple of points in her career and her personal life where they didn't talk about it. Just a couple. She had an acting role in an Owen Wilson story. It was called The Minus Man, I believe. And she played a prostitute who he murders in the first 10 minutes of the movie. And I heard that they had been dating for a while, too, as a result of working together on that movie. So they didn't say anything about that. They didn't say any. There's no reference made to her nose job. And she had a serious nose job when she got out of college at Mizzou. And she didn't tell the story that I was hoping she would tell. And let's see, how do I explain this? I think this was 1999, right around there. This is when Roseanne had a talk show. Remember she had it was 10 o'clock in the morning on Channel 4 or something like that. You'd turn in and it would be Roseanne trying to be Ellen or something. And she had Sheryl Crow on, and I was doing something else in the other room. And it was one of those deals where, did I hear that correctly? And to this day, I don't know if I heard it correctly. But what I think she said is that Sheryl Crow was performing somewhere in St. Louis. And it was one of those places where there's not really much room, like in Soulard, for a band or for a performer, even one person with a guitar, and you're just stuffed in a corner, and they say, oh, there's your stage. And you're like, all right. And you'd stand there and you'd play. I mean, you're only a couple of feet away from the tables and the waitresses and stuff like that. So she's standing there singing with her guitar, playing there, and a waitress goes by with a big tray of beer steins. Somehow, I don't know, the girl trips or something like that, and the beer steins go flying, and one of them hits Sheryl Crow right in the mouth and cracks off her two front teeth. And I was hoping that would have been part of the story too, but they did not include that story, which I was a little disappointed, to be honest. But other than that, this thing is fantastic. Absolutely great. And yes, they did broach the topic of her days singing backup for Michael Jackson.
I was invited to hang out in the A camp. While we were in Tokyo, I got a phone call from one of Michael's security guys saying, hey, Mike wants you to come over and watch a couple of movies. I go over to Michael's hotel room. We watch Amos and Andy, and then we watched Shane, and he's giggling, and Bubbles is around. When Bubbles wouldn't behave, he would take a ballpoint pen and he'd poke him in the chest to get his attention and stuff. I mean, it was crazy.
He did poke him with a Bic. He just would do quit it. Meanwhile, you read about chimps, what they can do to a person.
Yeah, I mean, even when I'm telling it, I'm thinking this is the weirdest thing ever. But I didn't ever really get to know him. I was pretty naive, but I still thought it was so weird that Michael had, a couple of little boys on the road with him at different times. Now knowing what is alleged, it makes me sad for the life he had. Obviously, it makes us all sad for the children. It's devastating to even think about.
Now, I see this kind of chirping online all the time and on social media where somebody who's a big star with millions of dollars in the bank and somebody very, very famous like Sheryl Crow starts having difficulty, maybe some sort of emotional issue, maybe the pressure starts to build up, and people just start throwing rocks at these people from the sidelines going, she's rich, she's got all this money, she's famous, and she's acting like she can't go on. Oh, I wish I had her money. It's yeah, but you don't know. And if you don't want to listen to Sheryl Crow, maybe you'll listen to Joe Walsh, one of her friends.
And then you're going to have this thing where, okay, you're in magazines and you're invited to perform on that and you're nominated for that. And then you're not nominated anymore. And then you're not in magazines and you're not at that party. And who am I? And, what do I need to do to get back to that?
A lot of non-musical things come along with success that you didn't know was part of the package. And it knocks you off what you were doing in the first place. And it can take years to navigate through that. And some people never get it figured out. They crash and burn.
Like I said, I'm blown away by this. It's on Showtime. Like I said, it's running all month, or you can pick it up on demand. It's simply entitled Cheryl, and it's on the Showtime Network, and I give it my highest recommendation. And we close today with the observation that Steve Winwood, Billy Squire, Emilio Estevez, and Stephen Baldwin all have birthdays today, and they all want the same gift, the 80s. And with that, we say goodbye from the Test Kitchens at jconline.com. Thursday, May 12th, 2022, 190 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. We're here every weekday morning right about this time. If you miss a podcast, everything is archived for you. You may email me at jc@jconline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with JC Corcoran. Stay cool, fool. Have a great day. Talk to you in the morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later, bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.